Hello, I'm Michel Hermagnan. This is number 0209, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0209. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Shannon Marie Harmon, who is a taxidermist in the UK. She teaches anthropomorphic taxidermy classes with stuffed mice in costumes. How did this all start?
Well, I started with traditional taxidermy. The first thing I did was a squirrel. When I was taking that course, I decided that I wanted to do something a little non-traditional. And so I did the squirrel as you would, put him in like as if he was sort of sitting down on his haunches, and then decided that I wanted to put a little telephone in his hand so that he's on like this sort of old-timey telephone, one bit in his left hand, and then the speaker in his right hand up to his mouth. And from there, I just sort of started getting ideas of what else I could do.
Sam Dawson is the author of Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90.
What made me write the book fits with the title. When I turned 60, I really didn't care for it at all. You know, body parts were heading south and I could see my back end without turning around, and my hourglass figure was more like a little fire hydrant, and it just did not feel so great. But then when I hit about 65, it all changed. And I really was having a great time. And I decided I'd find out how other women felt about it.
Larry Milbury is the author of Aviation in Canada, The Nordine Norseman, Volume 1. These planes have been around forever, but they're still loved.
I really have never met any Norseman pilot who didn't rate the Norseman very highly. And believe it or not, there are still young fellows flying Norsemans, which I find really fascinating. For example, these Norsemans that are still kicking around in the North today, some of them are flown by kids in their 20s. They get to fly these old, old technology stuff. So people did like the Norseman, and they continue to sing its praises.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0209, was Michel Armagnan, who is a fan of the Stuff File program. And I thank you very much, Michel, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Hope you keep listening. And tell all your friends, too. A program, by the way, that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, authorities in Florida say a suspicious package received by a woman turned out to be a battery-powered sex toy. The recently released report from the Martin County Sheriff's Office said a Jensen Beach woman called deputies on July 31st and reported that she had received a suspicious package the previous day. The package had arrived at the woman's home in a U.S. Postal Service priority mail envelope. The woman's name was listed as both the sender and recipient of the envelope. A sheriff's office spokesperson said a bomb tech specialist examined the package and determined it to be a battery-operated sex toy. It was a pink plastic adult novelty item with some type of plastic rabbit attached to it. According to the sheriff's spokeswoman, the recipient said she did not order it. Gee, you know, it would appear that mail pranks have now gone high tech. You know, it might be a good idea to check into which one of her neighbors she has a beef with. Or maybe it's a paper boy. Why a paper boy? Well, you know, I used to deliver papers as a child. And by the way, the statute of limitations have run out. That's all I'm saying. Let's move on. Donald Andrews Jr. sells paraphernalia that could be used to smoke tobacco or other things. He was arrested after a police informant took photographs of crack cocaine at his Scotia, New York smoke shop. But Andrews and his lawyers turned the tables with video showing how the drugs got into the smoke shop. The informant brought them in with him and put them on the counter in view of the store's seven surveillance cameras, all mounted in plain sight. The informant fled, Andrews was released, and if the case reaches court, it may be the police on the defense side, with Andrews suing for wrongful arrest. I think we should keep an eye out, by the way, for any new regulations on surveillance cameras. Owen Dallas Gurin, age 30, and a buddy were at a party with two women at a townhouse in Edmonton, Alberta. Gurin apparently had too much to drink and passed out, and while he was unconscious, the two women applied makeup to his face. The next morning, as he was leaving, Gurin realized he had lipstick on and got extremely angry, according to Crown Prosecutor Laura Marr. He smashed out two windows, Marr says, and then reached in one and hosed down the kitchen with bear spray. The women hid in the closet and called 911, and the fire department was brought in to air out the place. Responding police officers found Gurin at a nearby convenience store. They were pretty sure they had the right guy because Gurin was still wearing the makeup and he also smelled like bear spray. Gurin pleaded guilty to mischief causing damage, possession of a weapon dangerous to the public peace, and uttering death threats to the police officers, and was sentenced to 8 months in jail. And I understand that in jail, others might do more than just apply makeup while you're asleep. A little bit of advice for you there, Owen. And we have time for one more story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff Out program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Angela Estrella, age 37, was being held on house arrest in Osceola County, Florida, pending trial for attempted second-degree murder, vehicular homicide, and aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer with a deadly weapon, among other charges. When a judge allowed her to remove her ankle bracelet monitor, Estrella allegedly fled, renting a car and heading north. Her rental car broke down, and she called for a tow truck. Estrella then allegedly asked the driver, Mike Frazier, if he could take her to New York. When he refused, she asked if she could borrow his tow truck. I thought she was kidding, so I said, sure, Frazier said. Really? Estrella asked. And Frazier replied, no. But when Frazier turned his back, Estrella allegedly jumped into the truck and drove off. The truck was equipped with a GPS, and police apprehended Estrella when she stopped for gas. She was charged with grand theft of a motor vehicle. She was a nice, sweet lady, Frazier said. I would have never expected this from her. Yeah, well, you never really know someone until you know them. And this woman, by the way, is clearly a piece of work. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? There is a course in the UK that teaches anthropomorphic taxidermy, the art of displaying stuffed mice in costumes. Taxidermist Shannon Marie Harmon offers the 4-hour class in which students learn to apply preservative inside mice bought from pet shops and pose and dress them in a range of outfits and styles. Shannon joins us on the program from London, England, via Skype to Skype communications to chat about the courses. Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
How does someone get involved in taxidermy in this anthropomorphic kind of way?
Well, I started with traditional taxidermy. The first thing I did was a squirrel. And when I was taking that course, I decided that I wanted to do something a little non-traditional. And so I did the squirrel as you would, put him in like as if he was sort of sitting down on his haunches, and then decided that I wanted to put a little telephone in his hand so that he's on like this sort of old-timey telephone, one bit in his left hand and then the speaker in his right hand up to his mouth. And from there, I just sort of started getting ideas of what else I could do.
Now, I'm sure there are a lot of people who find this rather amusing and rather fun. And on the other side, I'm sure you have some people who are maybe more critical of the process.
I don't get that many people that are critical of it. I think I get a lot of people who will send me messages on my blog. I did a post recently about vegetarian taxidermists, and I've gotten a few emails about that, saying that people who are taxidermists can't be vegetarian. So it's pretty minor things, I think. And I normally tend to ignore those people or just kind of say, I understand your opinion, but that's not how I see it.
I actually find it hard to believe that some people can't understand how a vegetarian can be a taxidermist. I don't see how the two are.
I know you're connected. Not eating them.
You're not eating. Yeah, yeah.
You can if you want, but you're not. So that's not the point.
Exactly.
But we do get a lot of vegetarians who want to try taxidermy.
Now, what's the process like? What do you do? And how do you teach this 4-hour course?
Well, we start off getting to sort of know the mouse. I tell the students to pick them up, get to know their sort of body shape, take pictures of them. And then we skin them, take out all of their insides, and then wash them, give them like a little bath and blow dry. And then we will go through the process of treating them with the preservatives, stuffing them, sewing them up, and positioning them.
Now, are the mice like people? And by that I mean, do you look at the mouse and decide, I know what pose that I want to do? In other words, you know, chicken or the egg question, which comes first, the idea for the pose or the mouse?
I think it evolves with a lot of people. So I offer props and things for the students at the very beginning of the class, and they can take a few of them. But by the end of the class, most people have switched their idea to something else. So they see how well they work with the mouse, what kinds of mistakes they make if they accidentally pull off an arm or something like that, which is really easy to do, especially for first-timers. Or if they lose a little bit of fur on the head or something, you know, they might add a hat, or they might put them in a position where it's not so obvious that they're missing a limb. Now, so it varies, and I think, but some people do come to class prepared with something that they definitely have their heart set on doing. So I try to accommodate them as much as possible and help them through the process. And if they do make a mistake, we try to position it in a way where it's it makes sense and it looks okay.
Now, most of the you've already mentioned your website. People can go to your website and take a look at some of these things. But what are some of the things that people or you like to do when it comes to mouse taxidermy? What are some of the poses, some of the ideas that you've done in the past?
I have a box of my own props at home of things that I am meaning to do, like little cowboy mice with pistols shooting at each other. Recently, I did a sword fighting mouse, and I want to kind of get into doing a bit more like circus themed mice, so like fire breathing mouse and things like that, just because I want to see if I can do it. So it's like a personal challenge.
I actually have an idea for you now that I think about it.
Okay.
As you were describing that, you know, people who go to the gym a lot are often called gym rats.
So maybe
a whole gym situation, you know, a few bench pressing, some doing chin-ups, whatever the case may be.
That's a great idea. I'm also working on a project right now to do a little display case with rats that are dressed up as like lab rats, but doing experiments on like Barbie dolls.
Oh, I love it.
And that's for like a science-themed exhibition. So that will be in September.
Now, just as a photographer tends to walk around and see everything through a photographic eye, when you walk around, do you see taxidermy ideas everywhere?
I do, yeah. I do. So I'll see, like, people holding cups of coffee, and I'll be like, oh, I should get a little mug. Or I'll meet people. A lot of the time I'll meet people, and, like, their profession will inspire me. So recently I met the Raven Master from the Tower of London, and now I want to make, like, a little Raven Master mouse with, like, little raven perched on his shoulder and a little British hat.
Now, and when you do first meet people and they find out what you do, is it surprise? Is it shock? Is it humor? What are the reactions when you tell them what you do?
Most people think it's really cool. Yeah. So they usually ask a lot of questions. And the ones I get most are, can you stuff a human? And what's the biggest animal you've ever stuffed?
Can you stuff a human? Oh, yeah. Man. And did you call the authorities on those people?
No, but actually my next blog is going to be about that. I'm talking to some embalmers, and I've contacted the Tissue Institute in Britain. And I'm sort of looking into why we don't do it. And if there's some sort of physiological reason as to whether we can or can't.
When you do this, by the way, are these things lasting? I mean, do these things last forever in the process that's involved?
Yeah, they'll last for a really long time as long as they're taken care of and they don't, you know, if they're done properly, then they won't attract bugs, because that's the biggest problem is moths eat away at them. So they should last forever as long as they're kept away from, you know, house cats and the sun.
Well, you know, you can just tell the cat, look, see what happened to the mouse? Stay away from it. You're next.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you've received a lot of press for the courses you've been teaching. I mean, here you are talking to somebody in Montreal. What kind of press reaction have you been getting, and how has that helped or, if in any way, hindered your business?
It's all been really positive. I think that the most important thing to me is the blog. And I really, really like getting press for the blog. It's great exposure, and I like that people can use my ideas, comment on my ideas, and people are very responsive. We're selling out all the courses. They're all booked up. We're just scheduling in more now. So they're very popular, and I think that the press has helped with making them popular.
And for those in the UK, it's a four-hour course. It's what is it, £65? That's about $130-140.
Yep.
Okay. And have you had any ideas or envisioned the idea of franchising this, or perhaps offering courses across the pond on this side?
No, there actually are some courses over in New York right now. You can do this through a place called Morbid Anatomy. There's, I think, one teacher there who does it as well.
Well, it certainly is a unique and interesting way of doing things. Again, your blog, can you tell us the blog title again?
It's called Of Corpse Taxidermy, and it's on WordPress.
Of Corpse Taxidermy, and that's on WordPress.com. I thank you very, very much, Shannon, for taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Taxidermist Shannon Marie Harmon. You can check out her blog at ofcorpsetaxidermy.wordpress.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0209, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the author of Broad Appeal. Plus, we'll learn a little bit about Canadian aviation. And, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Police in Plainville, Connecticut, summarized the case this way. Brian Borey, age 43, a caregiver for a disabled woman, hatched a plot with the woman to bill Medicaid for extra care hours, and they would split the ill-gotten gains. Borey then submitted 27 fraudulent claims for a total of $15,065, even though he only did about $6,600 worth of care for the woman, who deposited the resulting reimbursement checks. How did the police figure all of this out? Well, Borey told them. He went to the police station to complain since the woman didn't pay him his full share, he says, and he was upset because he would have to pay taxes on the whole amount. He was arrested and charged with fraud. Officers might next look into his education because that he has a high school diploma sounds like that might even be a bigger fraud. You know, I could have made this guy the idiot of the day, but I did not. That comes later. An unnamed restaurateur in Nagoya, Japan, has filed a lawsuit against an affiliate of the country's largest organized crime syndicate, that would be Yamaguchi Gumi, demanding a refund of protection money she says she's been paying for more than 12 years, in total the equivalent of about $170,000. The affiliate, Kodo Kai, burned down a bar in 2010, killing people in a similar protection arrangement that went bad, and the plaintiff said she, too, was threatened with arson when she decided to stop paying. Now, according to an expert on Japanese Yakuza, a relative of one of the victims of the 2010 fire may also sue Kodo Kai. Wow. You know, it takes a real brass pair, even for a woman, a real brass pair, to say, you know, I think I'll take the mob to court and sue for the return of protection money. Wow. What lawyer, judge, or jury would want to be involved in ruling a case like this? And Tina Marie Garrison, age 37, and her son, Junior Lee Dillon, age 18, of Preston, Minnesota, were charged in June with stealing almost $5,000 worth of gopher feet from a freezer of a gopher trapper in Granger, Minnesota. Yes, you heard me right. Gopher feet. And trying to sell them for a local offered bounty of $3 per pair. Garrison Dillon and the victimized trapper were friends, and it's not clear why the thinly populated gopher foot market would not have deterred Garrison and Dillon. Now, I'm just impressed that someone can put an actual value on gopher feet. So apparently, these guys were friends. Well, I guess the saying must be true. Keep your friends close. Keep your gopher feet closer. Yeah. Anyway. Luann Giambattista, age 55, a 33-year veteran of American Airlines as a flight attendant, filed a lawsuit against the company in July alleging that it was subjecting her to baseless hassles because of co-workers' accusations that, argued her lawyer, were wrongly making her out to be a nut. One of the accusations was that she was hiding rats in her underwear and pantyhose and sneaking them on planes, based apparently on Giambattista's hobby of raising pets at home. The airline had allegedly subjected her to enhanced security measures for more than a year, allegedly causing her post-traumatic stress disorder and debilitating anxiety. So apparently there is the fear of flying, and then there is the fear of flying with overbearing, idiotic co-workers. My heart goes out to Luann. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, cash-strapped zoo officials in central China have apologized after they tried to pass off a dog as a lion because they couldn't afford the real thing. Angry visitors to the wildlife park in Henan Province protested when they found several of their star exhibits weren't all that they were supposed to be. Baffled spectators at the lion's cage were astonished when they saw a dog, which was a Tibetan Mastiff, staring out at them instead of the king of the jungle. I had my son, my young son, with me, so I tried to play along and told him it was a special kind of lion. But then the dog barked and he knew straight away what it was and that I'd been lying to him, said one mother by the name of Liu Wen. How can you tell such dreadful tales and expect to get away with it, she added. Elsewhere in the zoo, visitors found a mongrel dog in the timber wolf's cage and another pooch posing as a leopard in the big cat enclosure. Then, in the reptile house, keepers had placed two giant sea cucumbers, which they were trying to pass off as snakes. I don't know how they've got the nerve to try it. They must think we're all stupid, said one visitor. A spokesman for the zoo said, We're doing our best in tough economic times. If anyone is unhappy with our displays, we will give them their money back. Wow, tough economic times, eh? You know, I might be able to hook them up with a taxidermist that I know. One we just spoke to a few minutes ago. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Sam Dawson is the author of Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90. In her book, Sam set out to see what other mature women thought about aging by interviewing more than 70 women over the age of 60, exploring the full range of the human experience. And Sam is on the line with us right now from California. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
I'm thrilled to be with you.
Now, first of all, I want to start off with your title, the term broad appeal. And there was a time when broad was a great word, and it meant no disrespect. You know, people like Lauren Bacall, like Catherine Hepburn,
Sinatra.
They were great broads. You know?
Right.
So what made you write this book?
Well, let me go to the title for one second, because yep. What made me write the book fits with the title. When I turned 60, I really didn't care for it at all. You know, body parts were heading south, and I could see my back end without turning around, and, you know, my hourglass figure was more like a little fire hydrant, and it just did not feel so great. But then when I hit about 65, it all changed, and I really was having a great time. And I decided I'd find out how other women felt about it. And I didn't know how to go about it. I just said, oh, it'll be easy. What could be so hard? I'll ask a bunch of women, they'll talk to me, I'll put it in a book, and bam, I'll have a book. And I was explaining this to a girlfriend as we were walking to the gym, and another gal said, oh, that should have broad appeal. And I went, that's it. So that's how the title came about. And like you said, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, a broad was pretty good, at least in Frank Sinatra's eyes. You'd love to be called a broad.
Absolutely.
So that's how it all started, and it was almost a four-year journey. Little did I know how... If I had known what it would take to put a book together, I don't think I would have ever done it.
Now, you said things changed for you at 65. What exactly, what light bulb went off that things changed for you at 65?
I'm not quite sure. I just let go of the oughts, coulds, woulds, and shoulds. You know, I just stopped having to worry about the stuff that I had to worry about when I was younger. My career was fine. My children were grown. I was looking pretty good for an older broad, and I was enjoying life. I was having a pretty good time. And when I was 60, I had been widowed just a couple of years before that. And so I think that's why 60 hit so hard, because I was alone and I lost the love of my life and all that kind of stuff. But by the time I hit 65, I'd come out of that funk, and I really, really realized that this over-the-hill stuff is really a new frontier. I mean, I've been saying that, and I really mean it. It's an opportunity for all of us, not just women, but, you know, men as well. Used to be, like, our moms and our grandmoms, by the time they were 65 and their husbands were 65, you know, the husband got the gold watch, he came home, and the wife is looking at him and saying, I married you for better, for worse, not for lunch. And, you know, pretty soon everybody was dead. Now, at 65, you've got another 25, 30 years. You've got a whole new life ahead of you. And I think we have to really, you know, have some fun and pay attention to that. I mean, I was looking today, and I think it was People magazine, and there was Al Pacino. And he's 73, man, and he is out there on the dance floor looking bad, you know. And Jane Fonda, do you see her at the Oscars? I mean, she's 75, and she looks fabulous, and she's, you know. So I think what I want, Peter, is I want younger people to sort of read the book and go, hell, why am I going to wait till I'm over 60 to start having this much fun?
Well, let me ask you this. I understand you have three daughters, correct?
I do.
Do you have any sisters?
Not one.
Okay, the reason why I ask that question is I'm just wondering if the image, the idea of growing old in, has changed from your parents' generation to your generation when you were younger, what you thought old would was going to be like, to what your daughters now think old is going to be like.
Oh, way different. Because certainly we are not the rocking chair grannies of, you know, of yesteryear. And our my daughters know that. They, you know, I'm an inspiration, ha ha ha, for my kids. And one of my grandsons once said to his mom, because they call me Nana, he said, when Nana gets old, can she be my grandma? Because even the kids have a perception of what old is. And old is, you know, an elderly person with a cane and sort of gray-haired and stooped and that kind of thing. And that's not today's 60s and 70s or even 80-year-old people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really kicking butt and enjoying life and making a difference in the world and really, you know, out there saying, now's my chance. Either the women in my book, I have a section on retirement. A lot of the women were retired and now doing what they really were excited to do that they couldn't before. And then a whole bunch are still working, but mostly because they love what they do. So why give it up, you know? So
the subtitle of your book, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90. So what are just a few of the things that you've learned, that you've culled from other women in that age group?
Oh, well, one of the things that right away comes to mind is there's a statement in the book, and one of my daughters helped me edit some of the stuff, and she crossed this quote out. And I said, Jennifer, I think you crossed out the most important quote in the book. And it is that no can be a complete sentence. And for women, that is the hardest thing in the world, to learn to say no to stuff you don't want to do. That's one. Another one is, really, for some reason, it takes to be over 60 to dump toxic relationships, to get rid of those things that bring you down and make you feel crummy. And why do you stay? Why do women stay in relationships that don't make them feel good every day? So that's two. And then I have to tell you, Peter, a third theme that runs throughout the book, and women will definitely relate to this, is the damn 10 pounds. Everybody is trying to lose those 10 pounds. Now, skinny ones, no, but everybody else, you know, we're all looking to dump those famous 10 pounds. So I think, you know, that's some of the stuff, but really, to me, learning how to dump the toxic relationships is a huge, big deal.
Do you ever think,
and the women really taught me that.
Do you ever think if you could look back at yourself in high school and tell yourself something back then, what would be the greatest piece of advice that you'd give to little Sam from high school?
Boy, that is really a great question. And you know what? I jeepers creepers. You know, that was asked of me a while ago, and I wish I could really be eloquent. But the woman in my book said, I wish I could take my 28-year-old self in my arms and tell her how life was going to be. But I know that when I was in high school, I was so insecure and I was so, you know, not the in crowd and not one of the really cool people. And honestly, I'd love to be able to tell that little girl, you're just going to be fine. You're just going to have to start believing in yourself and know that what's there right now is going to change and it's going to get better, you know, as you get older. It's just going to get better, and nothing stays the same. I wish your body stayed the same, but but that doesn't stay the same either. But it all changes, and it really changes for the positive. I honestly believe that everybody in the world has to walk through their own drama. But when you get to where I am and you look back, you say, thank you, because I learned so many lessons from that hell that I had to walk through at different times of my life to make me really appreciate what I've got today and who I am today. So
you said
that's what I tell her.
You said you worked with one of your daughters on this book. Overall, what have your daughters learned through your book, either working with you writing it or just reading the finished product?
Well, they were just, each of my three daughters actually contributed in some way, but the youngest one was, she's an editor, so she was helpful in, you know, discussing how we shaped what I was saying and which quotes were the best quotes from the women and that kind of thing. I have one daughter that's just turned 50, and honestly, Peter, I wanted to shake her because she was just bemoaning the fact she was turning 50. And I said to her, you know, read the book, honey, read the book, because the prophet's never recognized in their own country, truly. I mean, she was so down about turning 50, and oh my God, I'd give a dental implant to be 50. You know, it'd be so much fun. It was such a great time in life. But right now, you know, when you're leaving the 40s and you're looking at 50, you think, oh my gosh, this is terrible. But I think every age you hit, every decade, you just wish you'd enjoyed that previous decade a little bit more. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what my girls are very proud of me, and, you know, they brag about their mom kind of thing. But really what they've gotten from the book, I'm not sure.
Well, the book is called Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90. It's written by Sam Dawson. And Sam, I thank you very, very much for being with us on the program. And you don't have to give up any of your dental implants. Seriously.
No. Thank you. I hope somebody will visit my website. And it's a great stocking stuffer. I know it's a little early for Christmas, but it's a great thing to stick in the stocking for Christmas.
Thank you very much, Sam.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Sam Dawson, author of Broad Appeal, Wit and Wisdom from Women Ages 60 to 90. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0209, and you'll find links to Sam's site, plus links to also Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. John Marshall was the longest-serving Chief Justice in the history of the U.S. Supreme Court and played a major role in developing our legal system. Last year, a college named in his honor was sued over a fraternity prank, and I think it would have Marshall rolling in his grave. A student at Marshall University was injured when he fell off a deck at a fraternity. He claims he was startled when an intoxicated student started shooting bottle rockets out of his, shall we say, posterior? I'll spare you the details, but the injured student sued not only the prankster, he sued the college, too. Let's be fair, drunken college students have been known to do some pretty dumb things. But to sue a university over such off-campus shenanigans makes a mockery out of the legal system John Marshall helped create. A judge eventually dismissed the college from the lawsuit over a technicality, but only after considerable expense. Learn more about how we all pay for lawsuit abuse. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about Canadian aviation. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day. But right now, much more Stuff File news for you on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A former cop is in trouble for allegedly filling his wife's hot tub with manure after he was served with divorce papers. Officers arrived one morning at a home just north of Montreal after receiving a call about mischief. Police said officers caught the man dumping manure, which was piled in the tub and also at the house's front door. The man had to be taken down with pepper spray after he took off in a tractor and then resisted arrest when officers caught up with him. Rene Danielle, age 64, faces charges of hit and run, assaulting a police officer, obstructing police, and mischief over $5,000. He pleaded not guilty and is to return to court in the coming weeks. Well, it looks to me like the wife won't have any trouble getting that divorce anytime soon. Pretty much solidified that, didn't he? Yeah. And at Atherston, England's Twycross Zoo, a program is underway to teach, or at least try to teach, quarter-ton giant tortoises to speed up. An extended outdoor pen has been built for Speedy, age 70. They actually named a tortoise Speedy, go figure. Tim, age 40, and Shelly, age 30. But that meant it took a longer time to round them up for bed at the end of the day. The Leicester Mercury reported in June that zoo officials were trying to use the lure of food to get the tortoises to significantly improve their way under 1 mile per hour gait. Excuse me, but since the dawn of man, and probably even before, tortoises have been known to be slow. Is there a specific reason we need to speed them up? I mean, perhaps it's all relative, but maybe the rest of us should just probably slow down. Why do you need a fast tortoise? Why? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Larry Milbury publishes books on aviation. His latest book is called Aviation in Canada, The Nordine Norseman, Volume 1. And Larry joins us on the line right now from Toronto. Hi, Larry.
Hi there, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for talking to us once again.
Great.
So this is the, I understand, the fifth volume that you've published?
That's right. Of this series, the original was late in 2008, which was really the one and only major Canadian aviation book published for the centennial of flight in Canada, which was in February 2009.
Now, I know a little bit about Canadian aviation, but I must confess I'm not familiar with the Nordine Norseman. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, the Norseman is really one of the world's great, let's just call it, for lack of a better word, bush planes. And it originated out of the very active imagination of a Dutchman by the name of Robert Nordine, who had designed airplanes in the First World War, and then got together after the First War with Anthony Fokker. You've probably heard of these famous Fokker airplanes, which went on from the First War almost into the present. The name has finally disappeared.
Absolutely.
But Nordine worked for Fokker, and Fokker set up a United States subsidiary in the early 1920s and sent Nordine over to kind of run the whole thing. And in so doing, Nordine met a lot of the pioneer Canadian bush pilots and engineers from the bush flying scene in Canada, learned a lot about the bush flying scene and what these fellows really wanted in an airplane. So ultimately, Nordine moved and left Fokker and moved to Montreal in 1934, where he designed this quite wonderful airplane and flew it for the first time in November 1935.
And what was the time frame? You say 1935 is the beginning. What was the time frame, the life of this particular aircraft?
The Norseman has been going on ever since. If, for example, Peter, if you went to northern Manitoba this summer to a place called Grass River Lodge, a fishing lodge, you would find three Norsemans in daily service. And these airplanes are basically around 80 years old. Those particular ones that are still kicking around were built in the early 1940s. So they are still very old airplanes, but still very serviceable, and they are beloved.
Okay, so you say they're still around. What about their production? What is the time frame of this particular plane's production? Or are they still making them somewhere?
Good question. Yeah, production started at the end of 35. A few airplanes were built before the outbreak of the Second World War in 1939, and the arrival of the Second World War really was what saved this company's bacon, because it was very tough to sell new airplanes in the 1930s because the Great Depression was still on, even towards the late 30s. But when the war started, the Royal Canadian Air Force ordered a fair number of these Norsemans, but what really was
most important for Nordheim was the fact that the United States government purchased more than 700 Norsemans for use all over the world in the various theaters of combat.
And what did they primarily...
And production continued, believe it or not, to 1959 when the last Norseman was turned out in at the factory in Cartierville just outside Montreal.
What primarily was their function, their role in the military?
They were what they call a utility airplane. The Americans designated the Norseman the UC-64, C for cargo, U for utility. And they did all sorts of things. And almost most notably, they evacuated wounded people from combat zones, from the, you know, from the front lines. And this was kind of the beginning of what is called today medevac, medical evacuation. And so a lot of young soldiers who would not have survived their wounds did survive their wounds because they were evacuated quickly by Norsemen back to field hospitals not far from the fighting.
Now, one of the things that's great about your books, and they're large coffee table books, doing them on radio doesn't do them justice. There are a lot of great pictures in the book of this aircraft, and I guess in various applications. What was it like getting all of this archival information to put together this book?
Well, much as you enjoy setting up a show and getting everything ready, it's the same with the author of a book. Interviewing people, for example, interviewing a mechanic who worked on Norsemans or a pilot who flew Norsemans and who has a logbook to show you and has a scrapbook of news clippings to show you and a stack of old photographs. And this is where, if you'll notice, each of these old 450 or so photos that are in the Norseman book, each has a photo credit, and you will see most of them come from individual people who have generously loaned me the pictures from their collections. Some also come from provincial archives, or, for example, the San Diego Air and Space Museum provided some wonderful photos of Second World War United States military Norsemen.
Would it be fair to say, I mean, we often say it with many things they make these days, but would it be fair to say with some of these planes, particularly the ones you write about, that they don't make them like they used to?
In a way, yeah. Well, matter of fact, that's exactly true, because the way they made them was almost, you know, almost on the back of a menu in a restaurant. You know, you've heard that kind of a story. He doodled out the first few bars of the tune that became a million seller on the back of something or other while he was having dinner. Well, that's the way these early airplanes really were roughed out. Very basic stuff, whereas today everything is done using computers, say at Boeing or Lockheed and so on. So it was a school, kind of a school of hard knocks back in those days.
You mentioned that you had an opportunity to talk to people who either flew them or serviced this particular aircraft. When talking to them, was it what was their memories of these planes? Was it a plane that they enjoyed flying? Was there a nostalgia
Well, it really
to
was,
it?
Yes, I'd have to say so. I really have never met any Norseman pilot, for example, who had any decent amount of flying time on the Norseman who didn't rate the Norseman very highly. And believe it or not, there are still young fellows flying Norsemans, which I find really fascinating. For example, these Norsemans that are still kicking around in the North today, and there are more than 20 Norsemans that are still flying on a daily basis. Now, that's not many out of the 900-plus that were built, but some of them are flown by kids in their 20s. They get to fly this old, old technology stuff instead of a beautiful new Pilatus PC-12 turboprop, which would be the equivalent today of the Norseman. And so people did like the Norseman, and they continue to really to sing its praises. And the mechanics, the same thing. Because remember that the Norseman was replacing a lot of old clunkers from the 1920s and early 1930s that people were really fed up with. So when the Norseman came along, it was really a breath of fresh air.
in putting this book together and gathering the information, in doing your research, what was the biggest surprise you found about this particular aircraft?
Well, not too many surprises, because a bush plane is a bush plane. For example, I have a pal who has a flying service in the north, and he has in his fleet are two beautiful, what are basically brand new turbine-powered Otters. And, you know, those lovely airplanes, or a Norseman, or even some predecessor of the Norseman, they're all in the same general category. They're workaday airplanes. It's what we have to fly right now. It's doing the job. They don't really think a heck of a lot of whether it's old or whether it's new. A lot of it has to do with, believe it or not, the bottom line and the amount of revenue that you can bring in on a job. Eh?
Right.
So the airplanes, they stand up until ultimately, like the Norseman, they do fade away. And there are always good memories left behind, and people then move on.
But they don't fade away when there are books like yours. The book is called Aviation in Canada, the Nordyne Norseman Volume 1. And when I see Volume 1, it leads me to believe that there are more to come. What are you working on next?
There's one more. Volume 2 picks the story up here in about 1955 and brings it to the present. And it's a much bigger book, and it's the color volume, because volume one, you'll see, has no color photos, because those were the years before color film. So we'll see how volume two pans out, and I expect to have it in print later this October.
In the meantime, people can find volume one, again, Aviation in Canada, the Nordyne Norseman volume one. People can go to the website. You have canavbooks.com, and you also have a blog, canavbooks.wordpress.com, correct?
You've got it exactly. Thanks.
I thank you very much, Larry, for being on the program with us.
All the best, and thanks, Peter.
Larry Milbury, author of Aviation in Canada, The Nordyne Norseman, Volume 1. You can check out Larry's blog at canavbooks.wordpress.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0209, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
23-year-old Joshua B. Ratliff allegedly stole a laptop, a wedding ring, and a digital camera, then made his getaway on a small red scooter. The victim was arriving at her West Elm Street home in late July when she saw the man run from her garage. Police say she described him as having long dreadlocks and a St. Louis Cardinals tattoo on his left cheek. With that description, nearby Springfield police officers believed it must be Ratliff. Now, the officers suspected him in several other burglaries in the area, and Ratliff had just made a $20,000 bond and was released in June on an unrelated charge of receiving stolen property. Instead of heading to the scene of the burglary, the officers headed to the home of Ratliff's ex-girlfriend. They arrived in the area in about 12 minutes and saw their man on a scooter. Lights and sirens blazed for about three blocks as Ratliff tried to elude the officers. Ratliff crashed and ran, and officers gave chase for a time but lost sight of him in the area of his ex-girlfriend's house. Ratliff ran into the home and announced he was, quote, running from the cops, unquote. The new boyfriend of Ratliff's ex-girlfriend helped try to hide Ratliff's identity by cutting off Ratliff's dreadlocks, but police weren't fooled. Neither was the alleged burglary victim, who later identified Ratliff. His hair was different, but he still had a face full of tattoos. After he was arrested, police say Ratliff helped recover all of the missing items, including a red scooter that had been reported stolen a few days earlier. Now why? Oh, why would you think that after committing a crime, merely cutting off your dreadlocks would make it impossible for anyone to identify you when you already have a face full of tattoos? Well, one reason and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid. but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0209. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0209. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.